This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So, yes, as you certainly know by now, we've been fundraising pretty intensely this week, using all sorts of little tricks to encourage you to do the right thing. You know, those sweepstakes, premium gifts, those funny little spots about being on a fundraiser diet. But still, maybe you're one of those people who hasn't yet called and pledged. What could we do to convince you?
Well, what if we told you that your neighbors had all pledged?
And by neighbors, we really mean the people living right next door to you or even on your street.
What if you received a statement in the mail that contained a bar graph showing how often your neighbors had pledged to WBUR? And they had pledged maybe 5 or 6 times, according to the statement, in the past couple of years. And you? Well, next to your name, there would be a big blank space, a zero. Would seeing that make you pick up the phone and finally make that call?
Okay, so we're not saying WBUR is going to resort to the guilt treatment. Well, not yet, at least. And I can already hear some of you laughing out loud, but this really works. There is ample scientific evidence that being compared to your neighbors can significantly change your behavior.
And in fact, it works so well that major Massachusetts electric utility companies are mailing similar neighbor comparison charts to more than 1 million customers across the state. And it's changing energy consumption patterns for many of those customers.
The question is why? Are we still so desperate to keep up with the Joneses? Or is there a deeper human impulse at work here? Well, joining us now to answer some of those questions is Alex Lasky. He's the president and co-founder of O-Power, the technology company that's working with NSTAR and National Grid to provide those usage comparison charts to customers. He joins us today from Santa Barbara, California. Alex Lasky, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So let me first ask you, how did you come upon this idea that maybe making people feel guilty about how energy efficient their neighbors are would change their behavior?
Well, we saw this huge opportunity. 20% of the average American household electricity use is wasted. And by wasted, I don't mean that people have inefficient bulbs. They may. I mean that we leave the lights on in unoccupied rooms and the air conditioning on when nobody's home. So nobody wants to waste energy, and yet we were struggling with how could we get people to save. Electricity is relatively inexpensive. The data is boring. And so we turned to behavioral science and to the work of Robert Cialdini for an insight about how to motivate people in semi-irrational ways.
Well, we're going to have Professor Cialdini on the show in just a moment, but take me deeper into your work with utilities. I understand that here in Massachusetts, NSTAR currently sends these neighbor comparison charts to 80,000 households in Massachusetts. National Grid sends them to over 1 million households across Massachusetts. So what exactly are people seeing when they get these additional statements?
Sure. Well, you think historically, the only personalized piece of information we get from our utilities is a bill that's practically impossible to understand. So when you open these up and nobody signs up for them, the utilities, we now work with 87 utilities in 7 countries. When utilities start communicating in this way with customers, they send them communications either through the mail or email, even text message. You open it up innocently thinking it's another bill, and you learn actually it's not a bill, but it's rather it's information that helps you save energy.
So what exactly are people seeing?
Yeah, people see how much energy, electricity, or gas, or both, they use compared to their neighbors in similar-sized homes. And then we run analytics on their data to identify what are the best recommendations for each customer so that they can then take action when they learn that they're wasting so much energy.
I see. So you actually give them tools then to become more energy efficient. Now,
right.
How quickly do you see behavior changes in people? Is it instant, or does it take, I don't know, a couple billing cycles to see, oh, yeah, really, my neighbor down the street is saving 20% a year?
Yeah, so it's according to the anecdotal evidence, it's quite instant, but it takes us about 2 or 3 months before we actually are measuring statistically significant savings. So we're now communicating in this way with over 8 million households across the globe, and what we see universally is that within the first 2 or 3 months, we start to measure statistically significant savings, and this year alone, across those households, we'll save more than $250 million. Or people will save more than $250 million because they're getting this information.
Wow. So it doesn't. The change comes about pretty quickly. That does beg the question, though, what's in it for the utility companies? Because that's a savings on behalf of the customers, which means less revenue for the utilities.
It's a great question. So there's two fundamental reasons. The most important reason by far is that their customers want this. When you compare National Grid to other utilities, you're not comparing them to NSTAR. You're comparing them to Bank of America and Comcast and American Express. And so we are beginning to demand from our service providers better information, better tools to help us manage our use of their products. That's one. The second, and the state of Massachusetts is a sterling example of this, is the utilities are regulated by state regulators. And in Massachusetts, both National Grid and NSTAR have a direct incentive to help their customers save energy. And they will be penalized if they fail to help their customers save. And both utilities are doing a good job at doing that, at helping their customers save energy. And the utilities can be rewarded, too, by the regulators.
Interesting. Listeners, we're talking about social comparisons and how that might be just the thing you need to encourage you or change your behavior when it comes to things like becoming more energy efficient. I'm speaking with Alex Lasky. He's president and co-founder of O-Power. That's a company that's working with NSTAR and National Grid and 85 other utilities across the country to provide neighbor comparison charts to customers, saying how you compare in terms of energy efficiency to the people who live next door to you or in your neighborhood. Alex Lasky, stand by for just a moment, because you mentioned the academic brain behind this, and we've actually got him on the line. Robert Cialdini, he's a social psychologist at Arizona State University and author of the book Influence, Science and Practice. He joins us today from Tempe, Arizona. Professor Cialdini, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you, Meghna. I'm glad to be with you and your listeners.
It's a pleasure to have you. Let me ask you, in terms of all the modes by which we can be influenced by our peers, how powerful is this idea of comparison? Is it the most powerful? Is it sort of down there on the list?
Well, I think it is probably the best way to say it. It is the most primitive. Mm. But I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. I mean it in an elemental sense. It is so fundamental to the way that organisms, not just humans, make decisions, right? That if we give honest evidence to individuals about what those around them, like them, are doing, they will move in that direction unthinkingly, automatically. You don't even need a cortex for this. I mean, birds flock, social insects swarm, fish school. Right?
How close does that social circle have to be? I mean, if Alex Lasky's company was to send me a comparison to my energy usage versus people who lived, I don't know, four or five towns away from me, would that be as effective?
Not as effective.
It would not.
We have data. It's quite a perceptive comment, because the more comparable those people around us are, the more we see comparable behavior as appropriate for us. Then there is a study done in the UK, for example, that has saved billions of pounds for the UK tax office by sending delinquent taxpayers a message that, instead of saying the usual, if you don't pay up, there will be penalties, that produces about 68% compliance.
Wow.
If they say the majority of people in the UK do pay their taxes on time, that jumps to 73%. If you say the majority of people in your postal code do, it jumps to 78%. And if you say the majority of people in your community do, it goes to 83%.
Hmm. Professor Cialdini, let me ask you, though, is what's driving this behavior, is it a desire to compete with our neighbors, to compete with those like us, or to be more like them, almost an anti-competition?
I think it doesn't involve competition at base at all. It's a piece of information, a piece of useful information about behavior that's likely to be appropriate for me in the situation I am in. Mm. I love a study that just came from out of Beijing, for example, shows you the cross-cultural reach of this. Do you know that if a restaurant manager puts on the menu of the restaurant, these are our most popular items, each one immediately becomes 13% to 20% more popular.
Interesting.
Now notice, there's no social pressure involved there. It's a piece of information. We've actually coined a term for this. We call it social proof. Not social pressure, it's social proof about what is a likely step that will produce good outcomes.
Well, actually, let me ask you about that, because I've read in papers and in books that you've written that it's the mere perception of what a group behavior, and it doesn't even have to be the actual behavior of the group, it's just what we think it might be, that's the powerful motivator.
That's right. And for example, that has produced some problems on college campuses where people perceive that the norm on campus is for excessive drinking at parties and bars. In fact, that's not the norm, but it's the perceived norm that then produces the problematic behavior. When we honestly inform people of what the actual norm is, which is quite low, right?
Mm-hmm.
That drops their tendency to binge drink.
Well, Alex Lasky, let me bring you back in here and ask you. I mean, Robert Cialdini said that it's knowing this kind of information that's the source of the behavior change, or the beginnings of the behavior change. And I wonder, how did you and O'Power determine exactly what information to give people? Because you can give them, say, the percentage of energy consumption reduction from month to month, or you could tell them, hey, your neighbors actually saved a certain dollar amount. What have you found is the most powerful type of information to give to people?
It's a good question. The truth is that we're still learning. We're running this, actually, I guess what would amount to the largest behavioral science experiment in the world, and we're constantly testing different ways of communicating with customers. What is the right message to send? Through what channel? Do you send it through the mail? Do you follow up with an automated phone call? Is it a mobile application? Is it an email? And at what frequency? Different types of customers in different parts of the country and different parts of the planet respond differently. So we're constantly tweaking this and trying to identify what has the biggest impact and what has the most sustained impact. What is, in a world in which electricity is relatively inexpensive, and it's more expensive in Massachusetts than it is in most parts of the country, but even there it represents a relatively small part of your average customer's budget. It isn't the messages about money that resonate. It's the messages
about
usage.
It's not about
usage.
Usage resonates more than money, really?
But what happens when you show people money is that if you said, well, you can reduce, you know, that people are saving $5 a month because of this, that's, people don't want to be inconvenienced for $5. They waste $5 all the time. I would love them to be inconvenienced and send that money to NPR during your pledge. it isn't the money. It's the usage. It is, as Bob described it, elemental.
Yeah.
It's fundamental.
Listeners, by the way, I did not ask Alex Lasky to say that. Just put it out there. But if you do want to send us money, you know we're going to put it to good use. Robert Cialdini, let me ask you. Alex Lasky and his company O'Power have measured behavior changes that equate to, you know, up to 3.5%, maybe 4% reduction in energy use. That's pretty significant, but I know you've done experiments where the behavior changes have been even more dramatic. For example, you've worked with hotels to increase the number or the percentage of hotel guests who decide to reuse their own towels. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So I'm sure if you've traveled recently, you know that in about 75% of the guest rooms where you stay in hotels, there will be a card somewhere in the room asking you to reuse your towels and linen. And the manager asks you to do this to save the environment, to save resources, to save the planet. We know they also want to change something. They want to save something else, don't they? They want to save expenses. And so the way they do that is to ask us to reuse their towels. And typically they say, for the environment, do this to conserve so we have a better, cleaner environment. Well, we randomly changed out those signs in three different hotels in the Phoenix, Arizona area where I live, a 2-star, 3-star, 4-star hotel. One of the signs said, honestly, the majority of guests who stay in this hotel in the past have reused their towels at least once during their stay. And that produced a 29% increase.
An almost 30% increase. Now, just that one piece of information.
Now, here's the most interesting thing. Our second additional sign didn't say the majority of guests who stayed in this hotel reused their towel. It said the majority of guests who stayed in this room in the past have reused their towels. And now we got 34%.
I have to wonder now, though, I mean, if it's so effective and if you can get such dramatic changes in customer and consumer behavior, why don't we see more of this? Or maybe we are and we just don't know it in other sectors and other businesses.
You do see it, but not in a systematic way. And I think one of the reasons is in our research, when we looked at the willingness of people to conserve energy in their homes in San Diego, we gave them messages about how much this would save them in terms of personal expenses at the end of the month, how important it was for the society, how important it was for the environment. And then a fourth sign that said the majority of your neighbors are undertaking energy conserving actions every day, something that was true that we found out. The only one that made a difference was the one about what their neighbors were doing. But we also asked them in a survey, which of these do you think will be most effective for you? Right? And the answer was, what my neighbors are doing is irrelevant to me. That will be the least effective. So one of the reasons we don't see it being used widely is that program directors who craft these messages, when they think about what's likely to be effective, introspect, and they say, well, what would be effective to me? Mm-hmm. And they miss it. We all miss it. We all miss the power of social proof.
But Professor Cialdini, if I may, though, I am curious. You mentioned a little earlier about how, for example, when we hear stories or statistics about binge drinking on college campuses, that made me wonder, could this method of trying to change social behavior actually backfire? I mean, could we get the opposite result as what we're hoping for, that maybe hearing a lot about binge drinking on college campuses doesn't reduce it, instead increases it?
Precisely. Precisely right. And that's a serious mistake that many social cause communicators make. They tell us about the regrettable problem. So many people are speeding on the highway. So many people are drinking and driving. So many college students get harmed by binge drinking. And it makes it seem like the norm because it's so conspicuous in the message. It's a mistake. We showed in some research of our own that that actually increases the undesirable behavior. So if instead you were to say, if even one person drinks and drives, if even one person despoils the environment, right, that now reduces the undesirable behavior because we've marginalized it instead of normalizing it.
Interesting.
With that message.
Alex Lasky, what is your data showing so far in terms of how often people want to hear about what their neighbors are doing? Because I can only imagine that if I got these comparisons every month, then it might be kind of just exhausting after a while, even frustrating if I'm not really keeping up with my neighbors.
Yeah, and that's why I think showing them what their neighbors are doing alone is not sufficient. You need to give them then the tools and power to do something about it. So it's in some places it's not the report that comes every other month that shows you how you're doing, but it's the email or the text message that comes only when something unusual is happening. So a message that says it's only 2 weeks into the month, but you're on track for a bill that's 30% higher than normal for you this time of year. At the end of the day, energy is still going to be boring, and people don't want to spend all their lives thinking about it. So it's about finding the right time to communicate with them and with the right empowering message. Mm. To put your fundraising efforts for a moment, I think there is a lot that you guys could potentially do with social pressure, but there's also a lot that the people in Massachusetts can do with their newfound energy savings. We are, you mentioned the million households in Massachusetts. We will produce more than $40 million this year of savings in Massachusetts alone for ordinary homeowners and renters. And it is really just scratching the surface of what could be possible. If rolled out broadly across the country, it's $4.3 billion a year that could be saved.
A significant amount.
It's a significant amount.
Well, Alex Lasky, if I'm sorry to have to interrupt you there, but I'm afraid we're out of time. Alex Lasky is president and co-founder of O-Power. It's a company that's working with major utilities in Massachusetts to let you know what your neighbors are doing regarding energy efficiency. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mr. Lasky.
Wonderful to be with you guys. Thank you so much.
And Robert Cialdini, social psychologist at Arizona State University and author of Influence, Science and Practice. Very fascinating to speak with you, Professor Cialdini. Thank you for your time.
I'm glad we had the chance.
And that's our program today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.